Charchian with us, as he is every Thursday in this spot, at Paul Charchian on X, on Twitter. You can listen to his excellent podcasting ability with Fantasy Football Weekly and Chop. Real quickly, before we get to some fantasy talk, Eli Manning, first ballot or after that?
I'd like him to be after that. I acknowledge that it's going to happen because when you win Super Bowls, it happens. But, man, he's just not at the level of most of the other quarterbacks that were in over the totality of his play. And I don't like that the Hall of Fame is just so slanted to Super Bowl victories that guys like Lynn Swann and John Stallworth are in when they have no business being in the Hall of Fame. And I don't care for it. I acknowledge he's going to get in. I hope it's not first ballot, because I don't think he was requisite of that. First ballot should be people that, you know, Tom Brady should be a first ballot quarterback, obviously. You know, it just, I'm not there. Do you feel differently than I do on this?
I think he's definitely getting in. I actually think there's a pretty good case for him. He had some outstanding regular seasons, but beyond that, I know it's two playoff runs in particular, but I think what gets overlooked, and I talked about Charch in the last segment, is he wasn't just good in the Super Bowl games. I mean, he won five road playoff games in 2007, 2011, including, you know, winning at Lambeau twice. And he was outstanding in the postseason games on the way to winning a Super Bowl. In fact, the Super Bowl, really, the first one in particular, was much more about Justin Tuck and Umanyora and Strahan than it was about Eli Manning.
For sure.
But I think, you know, Philip Rivers and Eli Manning came in together. I personally think Philip Rivers was a better NFL quarterback, but he doesn't have that postseason accomplishment. I think they'll both be in. We were talking about this also. The next conversation will be Matt Ryan and then eventually Matt Stafford.
Stafford's getting in. Stafford's going to get in. He's got the Super Bowl, and he's got, you know, just the huge stats and the longevity. I'm confident Stafford gets in. Ryan's trickier. You know, obviously, good. Got Super Bowl, nearly won a Super Bowl. But, man, I don't know. When the Commanders, then Redskins, faced the Falcons, we were like, oh my God, we can't win. Here comes Matt Ryan.
I don't think so. I think that's a really good way to kind of describe your thought about them when they were playing. Because, you know, some of these guys that are getting into the Hall of Fame, they've got numbers, they've got Pro Bowls, but did we ever think in the moment they were one of the best three or four in the game?
Right.
You know, we have that conversation about Brian Mitchell here. You know, he's number two Charch all time, all purpose yardage behind Jerry Rice. Was he ever the best? I'm sorry?
He's got to get in. At some point, I think.
Devin Hester, I think, has cleared the way for a much more serious conversation about Brian Mitchell. But Hester had to get in before B. Mitch, because Hester was clearly the best returner every single year he was in the league. And I don't know that you could say that about Brian. He was top three, top four, top five, but he was never clearly the best. He just has an incredible aggregate accumulated yardage number. You know,
and longevity, which, you know, and longevity should be a factor in this as well. You know, for me, the non-objective criteria to get in the Hall of Fame is, did opposing teams have to stop you to win? You know, were they game planning to stop you to win? And that to me tells me, you know, what kind of player you were. When, again, this is sort of a ludicrous example, but Randy Moss was on the field, your defensive game plan was, how the hell do we stop Randy Moss? I mean, that was like priority number one. And if you weren't that guy, you shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. If the opposing teams weren't scheming specifically to stop you, I don't think you're good enough to get in.
Yeah, I mean, your point about, you know, Stallworth and Swann, which kicked this off. Stallworth, no one was ever game planning for him. They were game planning for Swann. Swann just, his career was obviously shortened with all of the injuries, the head injuries in particular. I guess there are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame, offensive players, that defensive coordinators didn't, you know, lose major sleep over in terms of game planning. And maybe Matt Ryan would be one of them, given the weapons they had, given the OC. I mean, Denton made the point, do you put more value on a guy that had an MVP season or a guy that ended up, in Eli's case, winning two Super Bowls and was never really close to an MVP season?
Right. Well, okay. Well, let's pivot this conversation to Lamar Jackson, who has two MVPs. If he never gets farther in the playoffs than where he's gotten now,
Hall of Famer.
You think he'd get in?
Yes.
Yes. Maybe. Because
my answer to what Denton proposed is, I think an MVP season says even more. It's just such a dependent position. You get into the postseason, things happen. But over 16 games, over 17 now, you win two MVPs. You were the best in the sport for two straight years. Or for 2 years. Yeah. That's Hall
Which
of Fame.
Says a lot. But, you know, probably yes. It's probably enough right there. But not, I don't know if it's necessarily enough when people, you know, the expectation is that you make it to a Super Bowl. I mean, people want that. I don't know that we've got it here.
I know. Yeah. I think the quarterback Super Bowl thing, it's fun. But it's not equal to the NBA player that doesn't have the title. They're so much more impactful on the results because they play both ends, and a quarterback's out there only half the time.
Right. I mean, take Philip Rivers. Is it Philip Rivers' fault that the Chargers never got to the Super Bowl or got farther in the playoffs? Hell no. It was, you know, you had LaDainian Tomlinson and putting up MVP seasons. That his offenses were periodically awesome. And the defenses were never good enough. It was to me, it was never Philip Rivers' shortcoming that they didn't get to the Super Bowl, but will it be held against him? Absolutely.
Yeah, I think he'll be in, though. And I bet you both Ryan and Stafford will both end up finding their way in, too. All right, let's talk some fantasy football. First of all, quick personal question. What did Tyreek Hill go for in our league?
Oh, well, good question. And I can pull that up shortly here. Let me just quick pivot to our media league here. Now, you know he was available, right?
I bid on him.
Okay. Yeah. Which, am I looking at the wrong league? I thought you were in the media league. Maybe you're in my odds and ends
league. I'm in.
He went for $276 out of $1,000, which, that's a quarter of your whole season-long bankroll to get Tyreek Hill. Do you remember what you had bid for him?
Yeah, I think I bid $75.
Yeah, that's reasonable, and you're not desperate is probably why.
Well, I'm kind of desperate. I mean, I also bid on Josh Jacobs. So what did he go for?
Let me just see here. I just pivoted away from that page. Jacobs went for $201.
Oh, my God.
That's a lot. That's
really?
A lot. Yeah. And, you know, right. I put it, my team in this league is in trouble due to injury, and I put in some pretty big bids, which I don't normally do just out of desperation, and I didn't get any of them.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk fantasy football. And let's start with Thursday night. I mean, how about Stevenson? By the way, Antonio Gibson had a big week last week for New England. But does Ramondre Stevenson, the way he has started off, does it continue tonight against that Jet defense that has given up a lot on the ground?
I love Ramondre Stevenson. He is great, and nobody notices because in the preseason, we all decided that the Patriots were a garbage team, and we just basically wrote them off. Since then, Patriots have an upset win and an overtime loss. They have looked way better than anybody expected. And I know that you're cool with some stat porn, so let me give you some.
Okay.
Among starting runners, Ramondre Stevenson, sixth in yards after contact at almost 4 yards. He's fourth in runs of 10 or more yards. He's had six already. Ramondre Stevenson is number one in forced missed tackles. And here comes the Jets. They've given up the second most missed tackles in the NFL, 19 already. They're going to pound Ramondre Stevenson tonight. And, of course, the Jets have got an awesome pass defense led by Sauce Gardner. The path of least resistance is on the ground anyway. Jets got bulldozed by Jordan Mason in week one, 147 yards. And then the lackluster stylings of Tony Pollard last week against the Jets, he rolled up 102 total yards. I can't bet in Minnesota, but you can bet there. And the over-under for Ramondre Stevenson is only 64.5 yards.
Wow. But Gibson got a bunch of carries last week, too. By the way, you know, and we talked about this before week one, and I told you I think Brian Robinson Jr. is going to be a bit of a sleeper this year, and that he's going to have a big year rushing yards-wise. He's fifth in total yards after contact. Stevenson is two behind Dobbins. Brian Robinson Jr., fifth in the league.
I battled you when we had this conversation in the preseason. You said it was going to be Robinson that was going to have, like, breakout year. I said I thought Austin Eckler was sitting on a really nice year. And you did, too. We were both right about Eckler. Yeah. Here's the thing about Robinson. He looks like a different guy. He is leaner, stronger. He's got this extra level of energy and power that we just did not see the last couple of years. So I rolled into this year, and I'm like, look, the guy we saw was not requisite of a starting NFL running back. I love the version of Brian Robinson we're getting now, and I'm telling you, he is different than the guy that we saw before. And whatever changes they've made to sculpt his body, the frame, he just looks like a different, better runner. I'm impressed.
I don't know about that. You might be right about that. Here's the big difference. Last year, they didn't try to run the ball. This year, they're going to, and they've got a dual threat attack, which always benefits the running backs in the game. We've seen it over the years, whether it's the Baltimore running backs, the Philly running backs. It started in 2012 with Alfred Morris, you know, rushing for a franchise record that year because RG3 was a run threat. The same thing exists here. And B-Rob, as we call him around here, he's been a load since he was a rookie. I mean, he can do it. He just hasn't had, I don't think, enough opportunities.
I disagree with the guy that we saw before, who could not punch in balls from the 1 yard line, the 2 yard line. He wanted to be a power back that he didn't have. He just didn't have the power for. But anyway, we digress.
What does Andy Dalton bring to Carolina? I'm just curious if you think that it makes any difference whatsoever.
I mean, the easy answer is to just go, well, no, it's not going to make any difference. He's Andy Dalton, but I'm going to try to make a case here. And you tell me if you're buying into Dalton materially helping this passing game. Dalton had one start last year for Carolina. In that start, he threw 58 passes for 361 yards and two scores. Raiders are favored by 7. So the game script is likely to be pass heavy in this game. Then there's this: head coach Dave Canales couldn't fix Bryce Young, at least not through two games. But Dalton really fits his model better. He revitalizes veteran quarterbacks who other teams have given up on, like Baker Mayfield and Geno Smith. And this is perfect for Andy Dalton. And I think you could even go so far as to potentially start Deontay Johnson and Adam Thielen in this game, if only for garbage time stat padding, which is probably coming here. The Raiders ranked 29th in pass coverage by Pro Football Focus. They ranked dead last in tackling. There's a real angle here where, just through sheer repetition, Andy Dalton brings at least fantasy relevance to the Carolina passing game. And I would not be surprised if he ends up being quasi-successful here and that that he does not relinquish this job to Bryce Young for a very long time and maybe not at all this year.
Yeah, I mean, just because everybody thinks it won't happen, it wouldn't surprise me if Andy Dalton has a big day in a competitive game at Vegas, because the entire world will think Vegas is going to win, just like they thought Cincinnati would in week one and Baltimore would last
week. Week two. Now, you know about the circa $1 million, you know, millionaire bloodbath thing,
of it gone.
Right? Yeah, 70, more like 77%, something like that. Yes.
Maybe after Monday night with Atlanta's win, with our boy getting it done on the final drive. Mm-hmm. By the way, he never comes through in the clutch. I can't believe he did that. Sarcasm.
Kirk, you mean? Yeah, right, exactly. You know, remember the 13-win season the Vikings had 2 years ago, and all Kirk did was rally his team to upset wins at the ends of games?
We both know that. People don't know that. Let's just keep it a secret because they get upset when I talk about Kirk Cousins. The rookie quarterbacks, it's obvious, right? If you've got one, it's Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, it has not come together really at all for Caleb Williams to this point. And Jaden's looked, I think Jaden's looked good. He's turned into an absolute every week fantasy starter, which we love. The designed runs are helping a ton. Love Zach Ertz being a big part of this offense. Can we get a wide receiver going? Is it too much to ask? Because, you know, we're wasting reps on Terry McLaurin's career right now. Let's see if we can get a little something cooking there. And you need a second receiver right now. But other than that, I'm really happy with him. Caleb Williams, on the other hand, whew, you want to hear some comparative stats for Caleb Williams. His completions have been almost entirely quick read, first read, quick passes. On passes of more than 9 yards, Caleb Williams has a completion rate of 22%. His 3 net yards per pass is the worst for any quarterback to open a season in a decade. That's how bad it is for Caleb Williams right now. There are some angles for which make me think that he might break out a little bit against the Colts. Their defense is all banged up with injury, and that might ultimately help him here. Indy just let Malik Willis complete 88% of his passes, so maybe there's an angle here. But, you know, in the extremely small sample size of Caleb Williams, number one, versus Jaden Daniels, number two, it's clearly Jaden Daniels right now.
All right, last one, because I know you got to roll. With Tua out in Miami, if you have Waddle, you have Tariq Hill, what do you do with them if Skylar Thompson's the starting quarterback?
Now, we've seen Skylar Thompson enough times, because Tua keeps getting knocked out of games, where we've seen 5 games in which Skylar Thompson has thrown 10 or more passes. So we've got a little bit of data to go on. In those games, Tyreek Hill drops down to an average finish of wide receiver 32, and Waddle drops down to wide receiver 41. Now, in fairness to Skylar, he's getting dropped cold into these games when Tua gets knocked out. You know, now he gets a full week of designed play around what he does. And the one thing he does bring to the game is a big arm. So he can still connect on those signature long passes to Tyreek Hill, or maybe you just do bubble screens to Tyreek and just hope he does something special, which he could do. So for me, from a fantasy standpoint, Tyreek Hill drops from an auto start to wide receiver 1 to probably a wide receiver 2, and you're still starting him. But Waddle drops into like a nebulous flex territory where you could start other guys ahead of Waddle. Like Jacoby Myers against the Panthers, to me, starts getting into the area where you're in coin flip territory with Waddle, who usually suffers when there's this change of quarterback. So, yeah, that's
remember,
that's what I would
do. Remember, he started that playoff game in Buffalo a couple of years ago.
That's right.
It was not pretty necessarily, but if my memory serves me correctly, Miami had a chance to win that game in Buffalo.
They did. It was a surprisingly low-scoring game that people did not expect in that game. And you're right. I think Skylar did not throw a touchdown in that pass, and it was near that game only like 180 passing yards. But
here it is. I just pulled it up. Actually, it was 34-31 playoffs in Orchard Park. He was 18 of 45 for 220 yards, 1 touchdown.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
The problem was they could not run the football. They could not run it. They had Wilson Jr. The Skylar Thompson was being used as a runner, but Tariq Hill did have 7 catches for 69 yards. There you go. That was getting thrown in there at the last minute. I think he may have played the last game of the year or something. I forget how that worked out.
All right.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Yeah. We'll talk. We'll talk next week, my friend.
Sounds good. Paul Charchian, everybody, @PaulCharchian on X on Twitter.